Hello and welcome to Capitol Notes, our weekly look at all things California politics. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio. Anthony York from Capitol Weekly is back. And once you get the microphone adjusted, you can say hello.
I'm just struggling with your definition of the word weekly.
Weekly?
You say weekly look?
It's been weekly lately. You've been missing for 2 weeks.
No.
What explanation do you have for that?
You can talk to my people. Mm. Scheduling conflicts.
Scheduling conflicts.
Uh-huh. Suffering from exhaustion.
Not that you were blowing off the 7 listeners of the Capitol Notes
Chasing
podcast.
Chasing paparazzi with an umbrella.
Working stories.
Something like that.
Something like that. All right. Well, we are sitting here as the week ends, the week ending the 8th of August, and what a shocker. There's no state budget.
That actually explains my absence. It was a protest. And I was only going to appear once there was a Big Five meeting, and since the Big Five met on Sunday, it was okay for me to arrive.
Does this mean you're not going to appear again until there's a budget?
If you'd like, that could probably be arranged. I'm sure our listeners would appreciate it.
Please email in and let us know whether or not you think Anthony should continue to offer his witticisms in the absence of a state budget. All right, well, the budget obviously is the big story of the last week, even though there's not, like, actual agreement on a budget.
The big non-story.
But the rumblings have been interesting over the last week, so let's recount them if we can. Why don't we start at the end of last week, since you weren't here, Anthony. Recapping.
Jeez. If you ever need another gig, I think a scolding school marm would be a good one for you.
So you think my daughter, when she gets older, is going to appreciate this?
I think she's in for a world of hurt.
Lucky her. Yeah. Okay, so as last week ended, we had the executive order finally issued by the governor that would ostensibly save money by laying off part-time and temporary workers and reducing the pay of most state workers to minimum wage. Federal minimum wage, right. Not $8 an hour. No,
$6.60.
$6.55. Reducing it minimum wage because apparently that's the bare minimum that the state would have to pay in the absence of a budget. So the governor issued the order, which we'll talk about it again in a moment, going chronologically here for a moment. And then on Sunday, there was a meeting, the venerable Big Five.
Hence my presence here.
Governor and the 4 legislative leaders trying to negotiate the budget or talk about the budget. It's about an hour and a half meeting from what we heard?
Well, I think we missed a step there. On Friday, there was speculation that the governor was suggesting a 1 cent sales tax increase.
That was out of Sunday's Big Five.
I thought it was earlier. No?
Where are you on the news? Are you a newsman?
I don't know. You could dissect that news.
I won't answer that question. All right, but I think it's Sunday. Anthony thinks it's Friday. I'm sure it was talked about before Sunday.
I knew about it on Friday. I don't know about you.
Anthony's sources. Suffice it to say, the governor appears to have put on the table in the Big Five meeting a temporary increase in the state sales tax, a 1% increase.
You know what, John? You're wrong. I challenge you on this one because Capital Weekly wrote about something this week. Anyway, we'll go back about the sales.
Should I stop the tape and go look?
No. I take it back.
People will email us. Let's not get lost in the details, right? Details. Right. Who needs details when you're talking about the news? Anyway, temporary increase in the state sales tax, 1%.
1 cent.
1 cent, 1%.
Big difference.
What's the difference?
Well, it's 8%. Oh, right. 1%. Well, 8% of...
You are on today. You are good. No, I'm not cutting that. No, that's staying in there. Anthony desperately doesn't want to be heard. No, live to tape, Anthony.
1 cent.
Live to tape. All right, so anyway, an increase in the sales tax. Good gosh, we've gotten
off
kilter
here.
Please help. Script. What's next? And the sales tax increase has rumbled around all week, this notion that it would go up. What I find most interesting about the sales tax idea, and there are actually lots of things we can talk about it, is this notion that it would only go up for 3 or 4 years. Right. And then it would go, not only would the increase disappear, but the sales tax would actually go down below its current level.
And you really believe that?
I know, but under the idea, therefore giving what, Republicans cover to say they actually lowered taxes in the long run?
Something like that, although I guess it depends on when you come up for re-election. You know, what's startling about the proposal, I don't know, there are a few things, but, you know, clearly this is a departure from the governor's pledge that he made during the campaign not to raise taxes. You know, artful spinning notwithstanding.
Well, let's talk about the pledge. Let's play the clip that I think is really the quote, which this was, and I'll tell you when this was recorded. I'm so good at this, being the audio guy. August 16th, 2006, almost 2 years ago.
What time was it?
Afternoon, I don't know. But it was a campaign event when Schwarzenegger was running for re-election against Phil Angelides, surrounded by anti-tax groups here in downtown Sacramento, and the governor made the following promise.
We want to expand the economy. They want to expand government. I've said it before, and I will say it again. I will not raise taxes on the people of California, period.
Well, and he hasn't yet. What can I say?
Right. 100% accurate
I think,
so far.
I think that you alluded to what the wiggle room would be, in terms of that it would disappear, and then the state would be reimbursed, whatever, or taxpayers would be reimbursed for this, retroactively. What's interesting about this is that normally when you break a pledge, you do so as a last resort, as part of some sort of end game, and it really is a measure of last resort. And then you have a week or so of bad press and it's over, typically, unless you're George Bush in 1992. But what's startling about this one is this is really a lose-lose for the governor, where you have a situation where he's taken a hit. He spent his political capital by breaking the pledge that he made during the campaign. And we're no closer to a deal than we were before.
Yeah.
So, whether this leaked out of the Big Five meeting or, whatever it was, I mean, the governor seemed to indicate at his press conference yesterday that this was not something that he put forth, was not really happy that this was out there.
On Wednesday, since this will be heard on Friday,
correct.
Not yesterday.
By yesterday.
Does anybody
Wednesday.
Know now we're taping it on Thursday? But go ahead. Anyway, I want to talk about what he said, though, at the press conference about it, because a certain pain in the rear end reporter asked him the question right off the top, me. And I want to play a clip of what he said.
We have all kinds of different discussions, and because the two parties are so far apart, we try to throw around hundreds of different ideas on how to solve this problem.
And the point of what I find interesting about the governor's comments is that he seemed to try to explain it away as, well, we're brainstorming. We're throwing lots of ideas on the table. We're brainstorming. In other words, well, maybe I want to do it. Maybe I don't want to do it. And I think this gets back to what you're saying, though, that, again, if you're under the theory of breaking a pledge, you do it, you say it, you weather the storm, but you say it was for the right reason, you move. And this still, again, didn't feel like that.
No, and this certainly doesn't help the governor's credibility with the Republican caucus. And it's not apparently not bringing us any closer to a budget deal. Now, you can't blame the governor for trying. The governors have or the Democrats have said that they essentially need a tax increase in order to vote for a budget. They are the majority party. So the governor, tried to meet them partway on this. And that's a non-starter, apparently, in both the Senate and the Assembly Republican caucuses.
Well, it seems like the three things that you heard a lot about after this sales tax thing got chattered about all week is you heard about the issue of taxes, sales tax or whatever tax that Democrats would say you would need.
Right.
You heard about an economic stimulus package, which is I don't even know what to make of the economic stimulus package, because it's been laid out a lot of different ways. But right. I mean, if you start talking about tax cuts or tax credits, then don't you end up exacerbating the budget problem in years out,
to
come?
You are off message.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm being a little too realistic.
Yeah.
And then the third thing you heard a lot about was budget reform, because Republicans and the governor have talked about it all year long, what shape budget reform of changing the budget process would actually play out. And it seemed pretty clear at one point that the governor has really dug in his heels about the issue of new powers to cut state spending if he needs to in the middle of the year, the so-called mid-year cut authority, which the governor doesn't have under the California Constitution right now.
Right.
And boy, the reaction from Democrats was no way, no how. So if that's really a breaking point and that's the price that the governor really needs for backing a sales tax increase, that doesn't sound like anywhere near a deal.
Well, you'll forgive me for being skeptical here, but remember,
skepticism.
Remember, was it 2004 when Proposition 57 and Prop 58 were on the ballot? Prop 57 was the $15 billion credit card charge that the state was going to borrow money to close its deficit. And then Prop 58 was the guarantee that this would never happen again. And it was the budget reform that would ensure that.
And the rainy day fund, the same kind of phrase we hear now.
Yada, yada, yada. So, you know, we've been down this road of budget reform before. And apparently the budget reforms that we adopted that were used to sell everybody on the $15 billion bond have proven meaningless or relatively meaningless. So I think there are some questions about and I think if I were the Republicans on this one, unless I was just looking for some face-saving measures, you know, I'd be skeptical of what's in any budget reform package as well.
What do you think the chances are that and I think, you know, there's often a perception, and I'm backing out of what I was about to say by doing a parenthetical comment here almost for a way. But there is, you know, one of the things that those of us in the press get dinged about a lot is that the argument goes that we constantly ask Republicans, well, why aren't you getting on board versus, you know, why aren't Democrats getting on board? So I want to put that out there. I'm not necessarily picking on Republicans. But given that Republicans and the governor have such an unusual relationship and Republicans are the minority party, do you think there's any way that Republicans can find a path toward saying, okay, if there's going to be a tax of some sort, then we're going to want other stuff? There was a column, Dan Schnur wrote a thing for the Flash Report, which is a conservative blog. If those of you who've not read it before, should I give him a plug? Flashreport.org or com? Flashreport.org. John Fleischman, Republican Republican guy.
And podcast listener.
Is he one of the seven or eight?
Allegedly.
We'll send him a tote bag. But Dan Schnur, who worked for Pete Wilson, who's long been in Republican circles and now, the director of an Institute of Politics at USC?
Yep.
So he's got a new big gig. Right. But he wrote something the other day that I thought was interesting, which is that Republicans ought to just accept that there's going to have to be some kind of taxes to close this budget shortfall. And now the question should be, what do they get in exchange for voting for taxes?
Well,
what did you think? Do you think it's possible? Or
going back to the first part, I mean, I think in defense of the dwindling Capitol Press Corps, the reason that question gets asked that way is because I don't think that the Republicans have done a very good job of communicating what they want. I mean, Democrats have made it clear that they want a tax increase. That's been clear. Both the Speaker, Karen Bass, and the Senate leader, Don Perata, have said this budget gap cannot be closed by cuts alone. We need a tax increase. Mm-hmm. The Republicans have done a good job of saying, no, we don't want that. But I'm hard-pressed to tell you what the Republicans do want. I mean, budget reform has been out there. They want cuts and budget reform. So, I mean, you think, okay, as negotiations go, traditionally, one side stakes out their position, the other side stakes out theirs, and there's some horse trading that goes on. So, yeah, maybe the Republicans give on something like a tax increase and the Democrats give on some sort of budget reform. I mean, I think if the negotiations were set up that way, then you know, Dan's column makes some sense. Dan's column that I didn't read. Sorry, Dan. Sorry, John. Not yet, but I will. Makes some sense. But I do think that you know, the Republicans need to sort of get on some sounder footing in terms of communicating their message of things that they want, and has to be more than no new taxes, I think.
And you know, and I just wanted to mention too the policy part of me about the sales tax increase. You know, one of the things that I think has not been talked a lot about this week from a policy perspective of increasing the sales tax. Well, first of all, let's remind people that any tax increase, any new taxes that come into the state coffers, a portion of them automatically go to public schools through Proposition 98.
Most of those, much more so through the income tax and the sales tax,
yeah.
But yes.
But still some go to the schools. Yeah. So that's one effect. So you don't get all the money for general government spending needs or other needs outside of education.
Correct.
And the second thing that happens is by making a temporary sales tax, when the revenues go down, you have left – for those of you who don't know what Prop 98 does, and let's not draw your eyelids to a close by trying to talk about it too much. But Proposition 98 guarantees a certain amount of education spending, right. And each year's spending is based on the spending in the previous year. So right. The point I'm trying to make is when you have raised state revenues to a certain level and you've raised Proposition 98 spending and then you lower the sales tax, you've now created a higher level of education spending than you would have otherwise had.
Which would and be
you
have, a debt that the state owes
well,
to
and
education.
You have less money, though, in other parts of non-education programs to spend afterwards. Well, so you've created a different kind of pressure on the budget.
Well, but, you know, there is the rule of 54. I mean, there is a way to craft a temporary tax increase that is exempt from Prop 98. And
the rule of 54 being
the
two-thirds votes in the
legislature and the
right.
assembly that mm-hmm. you would need to get this budget passed. You know, there is a way to craft it where you exempt it from Prop 98 and maybe you give education, you know, 2 years of increased funding. I mean, I'm just speculating
yeah.
here. You make it as long as the tax is on the books, you give them, but that it won't create what's known as the maintenance factor, which is essentially the debt. When revenues fall short, the debt that state owes education. There's a way to do it.
There is. I think though, but now going to the political side after I just said I was talking policy. But if you go to politics, one of the things that I find fascinating
that would
is
be
that,
deemed a cut in education.
Yeah. No, yeah. But not just that. But if you're Arnold Schwarzenegger and you are promoting long-term budget reform and fixing the state's budget problems, the tax that you've put on the table and the way that you take it away only creates problems in years down the road, which therefore is not really change. You know, you're not fixing the long-term budget problems. You're adding a new one in there
right.
that you have to solve in some way, shape, or form. So in other words, it's a mixed message in a way
well,
to say
look,
we're going to do something temporarily, but we want to stop doing temporary things, borrowing this, that, everything else.
But the hope is, I mean, look, every year the budget process is a crapshoot because we are overly dependent on personal income tax. And so the thought is you hold your breath, you provide some temporary revenues through this sales tax increase, and you hope that 18 months, 24 months down the line when the sales tax increase expires, that personal income tax, that the economy has recovered to the point where personal income taxes are up again. I mean, that's the, you know, the hope, the thought, the dream, the prayer that motivates, I think, this kind of budgeting.
Of course, even if you do get this, if the sales tax went into effect, I mean, the Legislative Analyst Office told me they peg it at $5.4 billion for a full budget year.
Instead of six.
Yeah,
right.
Instead of six. So
same with the Board of Equalization has
yeah.
one.
So $5.4 billion, that still doesn't fill the hole or fill the amount of money that Democrats were going to have with their tax increase. So you still got to find more solutions to get the budget to balance in the year we're sitting here talking
but
about.
But once you get the idea of some new revenues into the budget and people have signed off on that concept.
In other words, once you've broken down the wall of taxes, you can get other
well,
taxes.
Well, then you start, well, or maybe other cuts too. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are, you know, I mean, a negotiation has to be, horse trading. I mean, there has to be some give and take on both sides. And, if there's a, it doesn't look like Democrats are willing to support a budget without some kind of tax increase. Although it doesn't look like Republicans now are willing to support one that does have tax increases, and
yeah.
that apparently is a problem.
In which case, it just looks like we are just as stuck as we might have been before this whole week full of conversation about taxes came up.
Yeah, and I don't know what your take on this is, but you know, walking the halls the last couple of weeks here. Well, last week nobody was here, but
including you. Oh, I'm sorry.
I wasn't here, but I was there.
Okay. Anyway,
now you've made me lose my train of thought, my high speed rail of thought. You don't get a sense of a lot of urgency. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong on this one, but I don't get the sense that this is something that people are really, really clamoring to fix. I mean, there's been an uptick certainly this week with the governor saying on Wednesday that he would veto anything that arrives on his desk until he gets before he gets a budget, which that was the end of the timeline that we didn't get to yet. But there may be a slight uptick in urgency, but I didn't feel it Monday. I didn't feel it Tuesday. Maybe you did, and you were out with different people, but.
I don't get an urgency from the typical end of the legislature, but I do get more, for those of you listening to this, newsflash, Anthony and I live in Sacramento. I do get a sense of real angst from my neighbors and friends of mine who are state employees. about
the governor. Yeah, that's the governor's doing.
It is. And that's the issue that we alluded to at the beginning of this, of the governor's executive order, which would cut state worker pay.
And there are 100,000 state employees that live in the greater Sacramento area.
Yeah.
So
this is the number one place it would impact people. And I have seen, for people who have rolled their eyes and just said, budget stuff to me years past, there is legitimate concern. Because if their paychecks go down to minimum wage, they don't think they can live on it. And rightly so. I mean, I don't know how people who make minimum wage can, but that's another podcast.
Let alone federal minimum wage.
Yeah.
It's below
and so,
the state.
And that issue hasn't finished playing itself out. I mean, Comptroller John Chung, who's independently elected by the voters, has said no way, no how. But you know if that holds, and I think it will hold, that he'll say that. The governor's team has made it pretty darn clear that they'll go to court and they'll ask a court to compel Chung to reduce the pay of state workers to minimum wage to try and save money. Now, the question is, does it really save money? And I want to talk about that just really quickly, because the first set of data that that I've gotten, I've been asking this question most of the week, I'm not the only reporter who has, was about the part-time and temporary workers who were laid off, about 10,000 of them. In the middle of the week, I get a number from the State Department of Finance that says a little less than $20 million for a month. That's what that saves. Well, I did a little extrapolation of numbers online here on Thursday, and that's when you see how much the state spends in a month on its normal government services, that amount of money works out to about 3 hours of saving the state money. So it's really not a large savings. And so the number we haven't gotten is how much would the state save by reducing the pay of permanent workers to minimum wage. And again, I think when you ultimately get that number, you're going to start to wonder, does that really save the state money? The comptroller says now we have more money than he thought we did. But you know what I mean?
Right.
When you're talking about pressure and concern and angst, you got a lot of pissed off state workers.
Right.
And I don't know. Does that pressure anybody at a given point or not? Or do legislators, majority Democrats maybe in particular, think, well, Chung's going to win in court, or it'll go long enough, or the court process will drag long enough that we'll get a deal?
I don't know. I mean, I think the governor was successful. I mean, if you accept that this executive order is predominantly or at least in part a political ploy to try to engage the public in what's going on and to light the fire underneath these legislators to get some urgency.
And I think you have to accept that it is.
And I think it is. And I think he's been successful in doing that. You know, it has been very sort of sleepy around here. And, you know, it's sort of interesting to speculate how different this would be if Daryl Steinberg, senator from the pro tem in waiting from Sacramento, were in those negotiations, because those 100,000 state workers, many of them are his constituents.
And the asterisk is he's will be taking over from Don Parada sometime later in summer, early fall.
The calendar or FBI says so, right? So
that was Anthony York speaking there. But the point,
it's a little joke.
Right. I mean, it's an interesting point. If you had a lawmaker in there whose constituency really was push, you know, who knows? Who knows?
But I do think that it has, you know, however it plays out in court, hopefully we'd have a budget by then. I mean,
right.
You know, I think the record on this is September 3rd. Is that right? Is that the longest?
September 2nd or 3rd, yeah. I mean, Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
And
so,
you got some political conventions coming up that people certainly would like to go to, too.
And no doubt.
Speaking of Don Parada, the pro tem of the Senate, I mean, he pretty much said this week that he doesn't see any of his people getting to go to Denver because he doesn't think it's going to be done by then for the Democratic convention, which is last week of August.
Right.
Of course,
in Denver.
I would be surprised if somebody didn't think they could get to Denver and back in time, but who knows?
Well, I know that the speaker would really like to attend. Karen Bass, the first African-American speaker of the State Assembly, going to see the first African-American presidential nominee from a major party.
But is that really pressure to get it done or not?
Is it pressure to get it done? You know, I don't know. I think it adds, it. You know, is it more or less pressure than the governor saying all these bills are going to be vetoed? Is it, or that state workers aren't going to get paid? I mean, cumulatively, whew, that's a tough radio
word. Easy for you to say.
Yeah.
That's why you don't do radio.
No. Not without water and a net. But I think that, you know, that the pressure is slowly building, and hopefully that'll lead to some resolution sometime eventually in the next, you know, year or two.
Yeah, we'll be talking about this on next week's podcast, I have a feeling, too.
Well, hopefully it'll be talking about the solution, right?
That would be interesting. All right, well, we've gone on a long time here, so we won't go on much longer. But we didn't talk about this subject before we started. I'm throwing another curveball to Anthony. But this is actually an easy one. And since we are a politics podcast, I don't want to get too much into policy. Let's do a politics subject quickly. There was a lot of chatter, and there still is a lot of chatter over the last week about Dianne Feinstein and whether or not she has an interest in running for governor in 2010. And it all started.
In 1989. Well, is when it all started.
It did. But the current level of chatter began after a column in the San Francisco Chronicle with an internal private poll that showed Feinstein would, what is it fair to say, almost blow out of the water every other Democrat,
including
Jerry Brown, the Attorney General. And just here on Thursday, George Skelton of the LA Times had a column where he talked to Dianne Feinstein. I don't know if you read George's column this morning.
I did.
You read that. You didn't read Fleischman's blog, but anyway.
Well, so I read it in the Roundup.
Okay. Oh, that's right. The Roundup, which you can subscribe to. CapitalBasement.com if you want to subscribe to Anthony's daily newsletter. How's that for a plug?
Not bad. We got Fleischman first, then me. Good.
Well, you know.
My marketing skills are about what my journalism skills are.
All right, don't get too far off topic. But anyway, so Skelton talked to Senator Feinstein, and she left the door open, very clearly left that door open.
She's very good at leaving that door open and not walking through it. I mean, come on, 1998, remember the Richard Reardon, was he going to get in? He wasn't going to run if Feinstein ran against Gray Davis in 98, blah, 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 blah.
2003, the recall, was she going to get in or not?
Right, even 2002, there was a little boomlet, right, that Davis was weak. I just, you know, color me skeptical. I you know, Feinstein's going to be 77 years old, 78 years old when Election Day rolls around in 2010. She'll make Jerry Brown look like the spring chicken, you know. Could it happen? Yeah, but this is a woman who is a senior Democratic voice on national security issues in Washington, possibly working with her first Democratic president, potentially.
But clearly has never given up the complete yearning of being governor.
Right. That's true as well.
Yeah.
I mean, is it possible? Yeah. I mean, and does that mean that Jerry Brown would magically step aside? Maybe not. And we might have one of the most entertaining governor's races and gubernatorial primaries in a long, long time.
It would be fascinating to see two icons of California politics going up against each
two
other.
Two elder states people. Right. Persons.
Nice.
Persons.
Nicely done. Yes. Well, we'll see what happens. We've got some time on that one, but apparently we've got some time on the state budget as well. So, final thoughts? Shall we wrap up?
I'll see you next week.
Will you? Will you really be here?
I don't know. Well, I'll have my people call your people.
He has trouble committing. For Anthony York, who's the editor of Capital Weekly, capitalweekly.net, I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio.
KQED.org.
We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.